Donaldson on tenor sax with Blues Walk. This is Lead Stories. I'm Retrice Lead, and two subjects for you today. And we start off the first one with a guest who's been with us a couple of times before and always informative. And today, though, the topic is a little bit harsh. When I say harsh, I mean we don't normally talk about these things, but we have to because it's reached a level in which it cannot be ignored. And that topic is the alarming spike in the island of Puerto Rico of what people are now using the term femicide, which means murder specifically of women. It's the numbers are rising. People are very upset about it. And we are going to just discuss today what is accounting for the spike in these killings and what could be done about it, if anything. Her name is Elisa Yenza. She's been with us. Hey, Elisa.
Hi, Utris. How are you? Can you hear me? Hello? Hello? I'm here.
Okay. Hello? Are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you, Utris?
Okay. Well, usually when one talks of Puerto Rico, one talks of pretty things, nice things, happy things, but not today. We're talking about the spike, the rise in the incidence of women in particular being killed by their partners, their husbands, their boyfriends, and nobody seems to understand or know what is accounting for it. Tell us a bit about that. What is going on with the rise in these killings? Have you figured out anything? Has anybody figured out what is accounting for the alarming increase in the numbers of women being killed by their partners?
First of all, there's a lot of reasons that can be account you can account as responsible for things like this happening. And part of the problem is that, as usually happens in many places, statistics are not taken in a way that you can sometimes find out exactly what's going on. There's ways to report things that can make a difference in what it means, right? Like if you mix women that are killed from strangers, and you mix those statistics with domestic violence, where there's an intimate relationship with somebody, intimate relationship, or there was one, right? And you mix, and then numbers change, and then it's harder to figure out. I think that we've always had situations like that, and in the past, things were quieted down because, it was like a private matter, especially a certain level of income. People didn't want that to be spoken out, and they would, fix it up and nobody found out what was going on, especially when men had power to shut up women and there weren't a lot of laws to protect them. And also the religious background where the man is the head of the family. So other things are like accepted and for years that's been going on. But I think that a lot of the reasons why we know about these things now is because we have a social web, like Facebook and Instagram and other things where you don't depend anymore on the government informing and then the press publishing. So people find out faster and it becomes public easier. And then we have something similar to what you have in the States, where the Me Too movement, where women have denounced that they have been, harassed by men. Well, it's also happening with women that have been mistreated or have been victims of violence, and now they're opening their mouths to say that they have not been protected by the courts or by the system when they try to denounce and have the man, in most cases, it's men, against the women. Physical violence is usually from a man to a woman. There are a few cases where the woman does the violence, but it doesn't make any numbers.
We lost you there for a moment, Elisa.
Yes. Where did you? It seems to be like I get a signal. You put me on hold. It starts beeping. Like the connection's not working. Sometimes. Well, where did you stop hearing me?
You were talking about the reason that we're learning more and more about women who have been who have suffered the ultimate form of violence by their partners in Puerto Rico, and the numbers keep going up.
I think that social media has made it more easier for women to cry out when they don't get help from the regular agencies, or they go to court and they don't get protection from the court. We do have laws that were developed starting in the 80s to protect. We have a special law that's for domestic violence. It's called Law 54, where a woman gets protected and they have places where you can go and shelter. And you're supposed to be kept, hidden from the person, and so that they can't harass you. And there's an agency where we have like an advocate general for women that's supposed to be handling this. But all these things are separate, and depending on the political position and who's administering the government, these things either work a little bit better or they don't work at all. And I think that part of the problem that you see now with all this visibility that's going on is because domestic violence, or other ways that some people call it, occurs especially when there's stress factors in the home or the people that live in the home. And it can go from anything from not having a job to have other hardships that I've been reading, that it happens all over the place. It's not something that's just happening here. The lockdown has contributed all over the world to increases in domestic violence. And some of them are recorded better than other, because some of them end in murder, where the male either kills the woman and then hands himself over to the system, or he's looked for. And then there's other times when the guy kills himself after he kills his partner. So you see all these statistics that are going on, but definitely the lockdown for the COVID virus has increased domestic violence and deaths of women that are in an intimate relationship in almost every place that I've been reading. And here it has happened too, but we have another situation that's to add on to just the lockdown from the COVID, because we've been stressed out for years now. And so first of all, when we had the economic problem that everybody suffered in 2008, we never recovered from that, basically here on the island. We're a colony, and we have a lot of restrictions on the way we can, develop our economy. And then we had the hurricanes, which left everybody without power and water for months. A lot of people lost their jobs, and then some people still haven't recovered from that. Then we had the earthquakes on the south of the island, where people were living out on the street under tents and stuff like that. And all the schools have been closed in the south since January of last year, 2020. And then in March, we had a general lockdown. The whole system closed down. So we've been locked up for over a year now. And so all these stress factors are there. People have lost their jobs. They don't have the income. Some people don't qualify for the help for people that are staying home. That's a federal program from the CARE. So all these things, all of a sudden you have the person that's an aggressor that might have just been around for a couple of hours when he comes home. Now he's home all the time. The children are there. The people are trying to cope with not getting along them as adults, and then having children that need to be taken care of, that have to do schooling online. We haven't had any of our children go back to school. So all these things are building up, and it's become very unbearable. And we've had people out on the streets, even though we have this masking and the COVID threat. People started going out on the streets with these last two killings that we had that have been dramatic, and they're different cases. But one in particular wasn't paid too much attention to at the beginning because she went three times to court and never got the protection she asked for. And then this other woman was killed by her boyfriend, who was a famous boxer. So that case called everybody's attention for a while. And then all of a sudden they started talking about this woman called Andrea, who tried to get protection of the court, and nobody paid attention to her. And the woman judge didn't help her out, and she was killed by her aggressor, who she had broken up with after an 8-month relationship. And then he threw her in the fields and burned her body. And now we have a whole issue with trying not to let people know what happened in court. They don't want to publish the recordings that are done in public hearings in the court for the women that go there. And it's a whole, it's a whole thing that's going on where everybody's trying to figure out who's responsible and how we can change this, because there's a lot of money going into all these programs and still we have these problems. And it's not only a problem of the women and the victims that are in the shelters, but the children are being totally affected. And, there's no light at the other end of the tunnel yet. As far as I'm concerned, we're still struggling to see what we're going to do about this.
Has there been an alarm yet to go out from the government to say, okay, everything stops, we must pay attention to this, and we must discuss it, and we must find some kind of a workable plan to help people who are obviously in distress? Is there any such thing that exists in Puerto Rico right now?
Well, first of all, as I said, we do have laws that are just not being executed. They're not coming through with them. We do have laws that should be put in, that should be strict. But we found out when this whole thing happened, we started asking for numbers, that 68% of the petitions from women that want to have an order of protection to have the guy stay away are denied in court. And some towns have more cases of denial than others, and it all depends on the court and on the judge and on the position of the person that's taking the decision. And some of them don't even have the state lawyer there to protect the victim, and the aggressor comes with his own lawyer, so he has an advantage over the person that's supposed to be, that denounced the crime, right? And the order of protection, unless there's a criminal case that is initiated with the violence, which is not happening many times. It's only like a civil thing where you have a restriction. It's like a civil case. And some of them, when you go to the, you ask for a temporary one and then you have to go to the formal one. And most of those petitions are dismissed when they go finally a month, 2 months, 3 months later to get a formal restriction order. They are canceled. They are denied the restriction order, and then the guy starts again. So that's an issue. We started having a lot of problems while we had the past governor, Wanda Vasquez, came over after Ricky Rosselló was asked to leave the government, and he was finally left as the governor. And this other woman who had been the attorney general at one point and the secretary of justice, she became the governor, and she did not do what they were asking her. The women groups and other civil rights groups were asking to declare an emergency on feminine killings here on the island so that something would be done. And she didn't do anything about it. And then this new governor that we have, his name is Pedro Pierluisi, he finally, I think it was in February, declared after certain other things were happening that he was going to declare a national emergency here. And he named a lawyer that was going to supervise from his office in the governor's house. He was going to have this group of different organizations that deal with women's needs concerning violence. And they were going to set up a plan. Well, they've been meeting, but the plan hasn't changed. And a lot of the things that they were asking from the past administration are already in law, but the younger people don't know that a lot of these things were solved in the 80s and the 90s, because nobody sees anything being done. People don't know. And so the whole thing is, it's a combination of not having enough policemen anymore. And the policemen have to be trained and educated so that they know what to do. and because sometimes women go and they don't get anything done when they go to the police station. They're not taken care of there, and that's one of the problems. And sometimes the police, which was the case with Andrea, the police saw that she had a case and went to the judge, and the judge didn't give her the protection order, and she got killed. So it's really crazy. And you know, they have that new committee for the emergency for the women, violence against women, but we still don't see what they're going to do strictly about it. And yesterday they had a hearing at the Senate. We had the women's advocate. It's a 10-year term that they have for the person that's in charge of that office. And she was there. She doesn't tell, you know, she never renders information generally to the press of what her office is doing. And she went yesterday, and now they have new contracts coming in for people, which we don't know exactly what the contracts are for. But basically, it's impotence that most people feel, and people that care and are trying to help on their own. I've had to help a few women myself. They've also been denied their permanent restriction order. And so they go to a shelter for some time, and then they get temporary housing. But things don't fall into place so that woman can eventually become independent and secure of herself and take care of her children and not have all these other things that interfere with her and her life. So, you know, you see a lot of women that go back to the guys because they can't handle things the way they are when they're not taken care of. The children are having all kinds of issues. We've had also statistics of, I think it's about 8,000 people that have denounced violence against children or children abuse or neglect in this last year and a half. And also we've had elder abuse to a certain point, although they've been telling people not to see their elders because of the COVID. So, you know, it's not as bad as with the kids, but the kids are locked up. Parents are not getting along. They have all kinds of issues going on. And if you already had the abuse, and it has multiplied. I think in the United States, it's about 9.8 from what global, I think the name, the group is Global Citizens. They have statistics where they've published a few of the studies, and they have like 8.1 increase in the United States over lockdown, after lockdown orders. We've had something, you know, a little bit, I think it's more, but we don't even know for sure because they've mixed women that are being killed like because they're prostitutes and they get killed by the client. Mixed with people that are actually living in a relationship together, they put the statistics together, and then you don't really know exactly what's going on sometimes.
So we know that help that's supposed to have been there for a while now isn't, in fact, there. And most of the help, based on what you're saying, directed at women. What's happening in terms of educating men and dealing with the fact that the killings almost exclusively are being done by men against women? What is happening to that dynamic?
First of all, I found out the other day when I went with one of the girls to a social worker, had a meeting with her, that they have a program that's called AFANA, which is for people that are aggressors. But I just found out the other day that exists. But it's not like an automatic requirement that people go through that once they have been aggressors. So that's one issue. You know, if that's not a requirement, so that people try to, you know, because there is a programming that goes on because of social reasons and religious reasons that sometimes, you know, it's just like a habit, right? That men are seen to have certain things that they can demand and attitudes that they can have. And that's coming in from one generation to another. So when they get to the point they're adults and they have domestic violence issues, then they try to fix it with that program. But we've had for many years in Puerto Rico, there's a group of people that are trying to institute in the Department of Education what they call gender education. It's called from a gender perspective, where they want to deal with issues like to show from a very young age that girls and boys have the same rights to do things and to aspire to certain professions. It's a lot about equality issues, but we've had issues with people from the fundamentalist religious people that believe that this also promotes people to have other types of gender preferences like transgender or homosexuality and stuff like that. So they constantly interfere with the program to have this taught from a very early age in school. And they claim that parents have the right to educate their children on sexual issues and other things. So we're not getting anything done at a very early age. It's very difficult for you to get that, you know, in a child. And if they have the, since they don't install it in an educational level in the public schools, they haven't been able to put this program into effect. Because it also includes families composed of not just the father and the daughter and the father and the mother and the kids, but other types of families, which are common, but they don't want to admit it and talk about it, like, you know, two mothers and a kid or other types of, you know, just the mother with the children. They avoid that kind of thing. And so there's no talking about it. And children only get what they get from home concerning those types of concepts until it's too late is what I think is really happening. And, you know, they claim that parents have a right to educate their children in terms of sexuality and other things. So when you get into the problems, it's kind of too late because, you know, you don't have the backup from the system. If the family's not teaching things, and it repeats from one generation to the other. And, you know, there's also, although I think that there also is machismo in the United States, it's always been kind of projected as a Latin thing, but I don't really think it's just a Latin thing. I think it just is expressed differently in different cultures, but we've always had a situation with what they call the patriarchy. I can't pronounce the word correctly.
Okay, Elisa.
Hi there.
Oh, my goodness. We're having such trouble maintaining a connection.
It's so strange because it had never happened to me before with you guys.
No. But sometimes things happen and there's no way to fix it. You just have to go through it. But anyway, we're not going to let that deter us from completing our discussion today.
Right.
So it's about, this is, does the island generally, do people on the island, or is it generally recognized on the island that this is a major problem?
I think it is, but there's some people that are more concerned about it than others, as usual. We had a big thing with this other girl that was killed by the boxer, and thousands of people went to her funeral services, and people went to, she was thrown over the bridge into the waters after they killed her somewhere else. And there was a group of people that went last Sunday after she was buried and went to the bridge, and they locked down the bridge, and, you know, a lot of people came there, and people have been writing on the social media. You can see it. And there's a lot of women that are coming out of the, you know, the dark and saying it happened to me. I didn't get my orders either when I asked for protection. And I've known several women that just left the island because they just couldn't continue to have a relationship with their children and be in peace and not have the father continuously interfering with them, and they felt threatened. So even a girlfriend of mine, it's a lawyer, she just left in December, and part of her furniture I took to help some of the girls that moved into a new place and didn't have any furniture. Because we're talking about when they finally get a home, sometimes they just have three mattresses and they don't have a dining room, even a small table or a sofa. So the children are eating on the floor with the mother because they don't have furniture when they go into these new places in another town with no backup. So I've asked for help, and I've had a lot of generous people help me out with really nice pieces of furniture and clothing for the children, and, you know, even a small backpack for them to carry their things when they go. And there's a foundation we have here that's hand that gave me a Wi-Fi device because they don't even have Wi-Fi. So the kids can't be, have a normal life and finish their education either. I mean, it's just so disintegrated. All the services are disintegrated. They don't even have the same lawyer for the different things they have to deal with. So it's difficult for them in a small amount of time to get their feet again because they have, you know, their psychologist appointments are don't come in immediately. They're separated one from the other, and so it's there's not good management. So and that comes out sometimes. People don't even know because once a woman's removed and she's put in another town, the rest of the people that know her don't communicate for a month or two while she's in the shelter. So nobody, sometimes people don't find out exactly what's going on. I found out because by coincidence, I started helping somebody and I'm also a journalist and I've been seeing things for a year and I read a lot, but it's difficult for a lot of people. Some people are furious because they thought that this was being taken care of. And now that cases are coming out and they've seen how many people have been denied. Once a woman finally decides to go and open her mouth and denounce something to find out that the system doesn't help her, is terrible. It's terrible to feel that you go in front of a judge and you're treated, you know, it's another re-victimization of the system against the person that's being affected or mistreated. It's a form of, I concern it, of institutional violence. All violence is not physical, you know, and it happens the same with the system. You're ignored. You're treated as an object or you're treated as a child and they don't let you participate in decisions when you have to, you know, do things. They don't even let you have records, copies of paperwork that you need because they retain it. The social worker has your file and you don't get it. You know, like it's also and there are laws that say that give rights to the victims. So it's
so
not
let us focus now on what could people do to help? How could they possibly help and help the situation?
Well, the immediate thing would be, you know, to get more information, to find out what's really happening, because when you want to complain and get changes done, you know, you have to find out yourself. And then also, we have a lot of politicians that are in office right now that you know, they have to put pressure to investigate. They're supposed to have an investigation going on to the organizations, the nonprofits that are managing these cases, but they're not investigating the courts. For example, they're not investigating the Women's Advocacy Office. They just had her come in yesterday, but they didn't even publicize that public hearing. And so I don't know exactly what happened because I just found out today by coincidence that they had that public hearing yesterday where she went to say what her office is being done. It's an office that's under the executive power in the government, but it's a 10-year seat where she, you know, once she's approved, she's there for 10 years. They did that on purpose with certain executive positions so that they wouldn't change every 4 years and things could be done, right? But sometimes that gives them so much authority and they don't really, render any kind of accountability for what they're doing. And then I think that the laws that are available are not being put into position. And a lot of our problem right now is that I think it's going on in the States because the lockdown there and people aren't working in the offices and you have to call all the agencies on the phone. And sometimes you'll get an answer, but the employee's working from her home and she doesn't have any other connection. You can't go there personally. You call for things and you can be like yesterday, last night, I called the police department and I have a 22-minute ringing of the main, the switchboard of the police department. There was somebody that had a car accident and they needed somebody to come do the investigation and nobody answered the phone. And this is happening and constantly happening. And when I went personally to the police department, we don't have enough resources right now. After the hurricane, some of the places still haven't been fixed. Then they have the COVID issue, so they don't want to have a lot of people coming in. And we have the fiscal, because of PROMESA law, we have our monies are tied down. We can't spend the money we need. PROMESA law was supposed to have the board define what the essential services were, and the money that we make from taxes should have first been designated to those essential services. But we've had budget cuts that this board is doing for us because they want to have us pay the debt, right? And so we've had cuts in police department budgets, schooling budgets, and all the budget that the governor asked for $7 million, the board said, no, you're only getting $200,000. So he had to, you know, fight for $7 million to help with this woman thing. And we're, you know, we have this imposition with this board, and we're stuck. We can't do that much. And then we have the corruption in the political sphere also, which doesn't help because everybody pulls, you know, their own strings to their own advantage once they're in power. And so it's, I don't know exactly what we can do because we have,
what is doable despite all of the things that are wrong and not working? What do you think is doable that at least gets some kind of,
first of all,
focus on this issue?
Well, first of all, there are laws in place and they're not being followed strictly. So that's one thing that has to be done. I think that courts shouldn't, you know, if a victim is going to go there and she wants to talk about really intimate things that she doesn't want to be spoken, then they should ask the person. And if the person doesn't want it public, then that's one thing. But they're trying to cover up something from somebody that was killed because they want to protect her privacy. Now, what does a dead person need to have her privacy protected when she got killed because they didn't do anything? And her parents are asking the court to let them hear, to let everybody hear what the judge said, because if the judge isn't doing her job, she has to be removed, right? Well, they have to analyze what's going on. And in the meantime, the money has to show up and services have to be by demand and by need. They should be given without any excuses. You know, women want to go back to work. They're stuck in these temporary housings. They don't have any place to leave the kids. So if they have a job offer, they can't go to work. They don't have any money. They just get food stamps, right? And they have a temporary dwelling for 6 months with their rent is paid and their water bill and their electricity bill. But they can't make any money and they can't buy soap and shampoo with the food stamps. They don't have money. They don't have any money coming from them. So they're stuck. You know, they can't go to work because they don't have school for the kids. So they can't even work for 4 hours. They have to start doing things like these women need help for childcare. They need to be able to, if they have to be retrained and educated so they can work in something else, they need help for that. If they have to finish their education, they have to be protected where they will be able to do their life and not have the guy finding out where they are. Some of them get moved a second time because the guy finds out where they are. So all these things have to be a priority. To protect, I mean, all children should be protected, but these children have special needs. They should have their records in the education department have to be private and managed by a certain person only so that the rest of the people can't find out where the children are now in what school they are, because that's another issue. This is a small island. Everybody knows everybody. It's easy to find out, you know, who's who. Eventually, and if you have somebody in the Department of Education, for example, or the Family Department, that has access to a computer, and you have the Social Security number of the woman or the children, you can find out a lot of things. Any employee that's working on a regular basis with records can do it. And if the system is not, you know, if the person doesn't even suspect that somebody found out that way, they can't even find out who did it. You know, so the whole thing. I mean. People that have this issue
I understand
managed.
There's a lot that is wrong, a lot that is not working. But is there one thing you think has a chance of working if people would support it?
Well, the first thing is that there should be more policemen, more switchboards available, and as soon as somebody complains, they should be taken seriously, and temporary measures should be given so that to avoid future damage. And, you know, the guys that are doing this or the women that are aggressive, there are a few. They should immediately be, you know, without any penalty, you know, just in case, everybody should be, have certain... Yep.
What I was asking was, if people wanted to help, say, make a donation to an organization that is intricately involved in this matter and trying to get some kind of help to the people who desperately need it, is there such a thing right now where they can reach out and send resources to get something going, even if it may not be the full effect, but it is something?
Well, there are some of the organizations are better than others. The only good experience I've had, and it's not totally perfect, but I found that this organization called Hogar Ruth, which means Ruth's home in English, I've seen that they have been supplying services, and even after the woman leaves, they'll continue the psychological treatment for the children, and they follow up on the family and the woman, although it's only a temporary housing for 6 months. Because I've had bad experiences with some of the other groups that they don't do that, and once the woman leaves, she practically on her own with the social services or the other program that some of them are channeled through the municipal governments. And one of the girls I know just got her first psychological appointment 2.5 months after she's out of the shelter. So for 2.5 months, nothing's happening. There's not a place right now that I can say, except these people that I know have been helping, but it all depends if the policeman takes you to that center and not the other one. Because these places are also, people don't know where they are, because that's part of the protection for the woman. You can't really know where the shelters are. So all you can probably get is a phone number. And it's part of the problem. It's really, I mean, I think the best thing that if you find out somebody that's helping on the social, you know, on the social media, and they're asking for you if there's a fundraiser, because for example, now I have one of the girls has a car that needs repairs, and so we're trying to see, we can't fund it through the program, then I'm going to do a FundMe for her. But there are people helping out that way, and it's easy. It's more like right now it's easier to probably see who needs help and verify that, you know, the person who's helping, and then just help directly. Because until things are cleared out, it's difficult. Right now, they have a hotline where people call, and some girls get immediate help when they're in the process of, you know, when they're trying to leave the house. But once they're in the shelter and they even have their phone taken away while they're in there. So you can't communicate. You don't know what's going on until they're out. And it's very strange. It's very strange. And then they have I have one girl that's a Dominican Republic person. She doesn't have legal standing here, and she qualifies under the Woman Protection Act. And because she was brought here as a sexual slave, she gets immediate protection from certain federal laws, and nobody has worked that out for her. So she has, her children have all the social help, but she doesn't have any. And those things have to be solved from a, you know, everything has to be put in place together, which it isn't. So, you know, for her children's pension, there's one lawyer. For her protection from violence, it's another lawyer. And the lawyers don't communicate, so sometimes they don't all know what's going on. And it's just crazy. It's just,
it's also overwhelming. What we're looking
for, it is.
And what we have to work toward is something simple and direct that you could ask.
And holistic, where everything,
whatever
is treated,
it is,
not just one part.
We need a simple where you can say, you know, this organization is doing good work, and we can support such an
I can't hear you well. I don't know what's happening, but I can't hear what you're saying. I can
our
like
connection
you're mumbling.
Is horrendous today. I don't know why, but this happens from time to time. We need to start thinking about in terms of what is practical, what is something that can be put into place immediately and made use of immediately and doesn't involve a whole bunch of bureaucracy. We need something plain and simple where people can get help. But in the meantime, I want to ask about the question of we have legislators here in the United States who obviously have a connection to Puerto Rico still. Is there anything happening on that front where legislators here in the U.S. are involved directly in this situation?
Not particularly in this situation with the woman violence. Have we seen something? There have been a few other things that are finally coming through where they've been investigating the power authority contract to privatize the company. And some of the funds, we have some of the government departments that are being evaluated because the federal funds there's questioning about how they're worked in. Even the, you know, with the COVID, there could be much more done with the monies from the care programs, because there is money to take care of special situations that happen. And there is precisely statistics, not for Puerto Rico in general, for the United States. We have statistics already where they have accounted for the fact that COVID has become a factor that has increased in the United States, and Puerto Rico is part of the United States. I'm pretty sure that our statistics are put in with those as the ones that they have been able to capture, because some of the statistics are not, you know, flowing correctly from Puerto Rico to the federal government. That's part of the problem. But I mean, this has to be taken care of. The damage from decisions that are being made for COVID is only adding up to something that already existed all over the world. It's not only here. And I think that because we're talking about the family, the roots of people and the future, how you can damage permanently people with allowing this to happen and not have help, we all have to get together and demand that it be something easy to get, that protection has to be given immediately, and then you figure out exactly how much or whatever. But you have to help the person and get children and mothers out of danger before it's too late. And then protect them, you know, until you're really sure, even though parents have a right to see the kids and grandparents have a right to have a relationship, you have to be sure. You have to have enough staff in all the different agencies to take care of this. You can't have somebody waiting around because there's only one police to deal with domestic violence and he's taking care of another case. And you can sit there and be hiding and, you know, trying, hoping that the guy doesn't come to you, which is, I've seen it happen already. You have to have enough people. There is money available. We have to get more people to.
The abysmal record is that, I mean, if we were to look at how the U.S. responded in terms of the hurricanes and the storms and the other major catastrophes that have afflicted Puerto Rico, we can have only a little, if any, hope that this issue would get more attention.
I'll give you one example what I just came to my mind that we could do. First, like, for example, with this whole debt deal and everything else that's happening, we finally had somebody from the United States government finally admitted that Trump had been, you know, blocking the release of funds that had been already allocated to Puerto Rico for the hurricane recovery. So you still have homes with blue tarps on the roofs and all kinds of other issues that are going on. Then we also have a situation with the board. They've minimized 50% of the University of Puerto Rico's budget for the 11 different campuses that we have. We have students that are finishing their education and could take care of all these issues, and we would automatically have a force of medical students, nursing students, psychology students, and people in all the different social worker fields that could be there supervised by other people to help out, that would really benefit from the experience. And at the same time, we could have a workforce, and the university could get some of that income instead of giving it out to other organizations that we never find out exactly what they do with it. So that's part of the issue we have. The money has been taken out of certain of our structures, which is only going to impair us from having the correct people that are educated for this. We need to protect the University of Puerto Rico and the agronomy programs also, and other things. And we do have the resources, and there's a lot of prepared people here on the island that are unemployed right now. You know, we need to have somebody focus, and we need to have people from the bottom that supervises. We can't leave just the politicians supervising. We already know that it's not working. We need more people from the bottom community supervising, and it has to be an open process. We can't continue to have these things where these contracts are handed out, because once you have a private contract, you can't go in and see who's on the payroll, for example, and what they're spending the money that was given to them. They just have to have an annual report where you can't really see what happened and who was getting the money and how the program helped people. So but I think that there's immediate things that could be done. And as I said, the University of Puerto Rico has people that work there. We have other people that are unemployed that can be called back. We can train new policemen, which we don't have enough of them. You know, policemen here don't even get Social Security because many years ago they had a public pension, which is now in jeopardy because of the debt that we have. And so they don't pay Social Security. So they're, you know, some of them are leaving the force and going to the United States. So we don't have enough cops right now. It's just like it's a whole buildup.
I know. I think it's horrendous, but we still have to find and still have to persevere in order to find some kind of a solution. Because you can't have women or anybody for that matter just be flopping and nothing happens.
And you know, there's a certain group of people that say, well, you know, there's more men dying than women. And that is correct. When you look at the statistics on homicide, there are more men being killed, but they're not being killed by their intimate partners. They're being killed because they're in the drug movement, or they're doing other kind of criminal acts, or, you know, and they get killed because of that. They're not getting killed in their home environment or by somebody that was supposed to love them. They're a prostitute, or just because they're walking on the streets. And
let's summarize. We've only touched on it, and we had the misfortune of a pretty bad connection. But this does not stop us from talking about it. And we should follow up very soon with some ideas of what can be done immediately to help. That's the whole issue, because it's not just the women, it's the children, it's the elders. And we can't just throw up our hands and say, well, nothing is working. Okay, so if nothing's working, well, what do you think we can do to help things work or to make things work? That's going to be the next challenge. But I want to thank you very much, Elisa, for being with us today. And putting up with our, I don't know what it is we can do. And sometimes, you know, we call overseas, especially, and connection just vanishes. But this is part of what we do. And so
I think there's an overload right now of, because everybody has to do things online. I think there's an overload on the systems right now. It happens here a lot too. But I really appreciate that you're so interested in us. And this is a beautiful place. People love it here. We can do better. There is money already available. We might need to assign more money. But then the most important thing is that that we demand accountability so that we can see that it's being used correctly and that there are no delays when somebody needs help. Because when everything is hidden and you can't see what's happening, that's when these other things happen, and then everybody's sorry that it happens. And, you know, in the meantime, even, you know, just the person should be able to say, I don't want to live with this person anymore. Even if the person isn't violent, the person should be able to leave and not have to be into these other situations. So I think, you know, hopefully we'll be able to start working it out. And we do have to educate the children from very young so that tolerance and equality is ingrown in children from a very early age, so that when they become older, they don't execute this, you know?
Well, we've come to the end of the program today, Elisa. We'll connect again very soon and continue the conversation and also exploring what we can do to help. Thanks for being with us today.